Hey marketers, if you want to get the latest news, trends, and insights in marketing, advertising, and tech, check out the Adweek Podcast Network. Learn from leading voices across media and marketing with original shows like Yeah, That's Probably an Ad, Marketing Vanguard, and Tech Magic with Kathy Hackle. Start listening now by searching Adweek wherever you listen to podcasts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/generate to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/generate. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Hey there, are you ready to elevate your personal brand or company? Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for video content and audience building. Imagine growing your brand organically on social media without the hassle of editing videos for hours. With Viral Growth, it's a breeze. They handle the brainstorming, scripting, and editing while you simply just hit record. And don't worry about your niche. They cater to everyone, from business and marketing to health and wellness. Are you ready to make waves in the social media realm? Visit viralgrowth.io and use code ADWEEK, that's ADWEEK, all lowercase, and get 10% off your plan.
You're listening to Yeah, That's Probably an Ad, the Adweek podcast that takes a look at marketing, advertising, pop culture, and tech, because in the end, everything is an ad. Hello, I am Shannon Miller, the creative and inclusion editor here at Adweek. Now, typically to my right is David Briner, my co-captain. However, he is taking a much-deserved vacation. So it is just me today, joined by two very great friends. I am excited to have my colleague join me, senior editor T.L. Stanley, but we all just call her Terry. Terry, this is the first time that we've been on the show together, I think.
I know. It's very exciting.
It's very exciting. And also just very odd. You would think because we talk every day that we've talked in this capacity before, but we have not.
I know. And I'm thrilled that you are co-hosting this podcast now because I like to pop in regularly, frequently. So I'm very happy to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, this has been very fun so far. So I am excited for this to be the first of what will surely be many on-air chats. And joining us today, we have a very special guest. All the way in the UK, we have the Chief Creative Officer at agency Taylor Herring, Peter Mount Stevens. Hi, Peter.
Hi. Thanks for having me. Delighted to join.
Thank you for joining us for an episode that should be interesting, to say the least. This has been a pretty busy week at Adweek. We just wrapped up Women Trailblazers, which was another fantastic event. If you have not checked out that issue with cover star Tracee Ellis Ross, I cannot recommend it enough. It was just a very inspiring week. Now, on the editorial side, it's been weird. It's been a little bit odd, to say the least. It's definitely shown a very fun and interesting side of advertising. Today, we are going to talk about some of the very memorable stunts that have taken place. It's definitely an interesting summer. We, especially coming out of, well, I don't want to say coming out of a pandemic. We are definitely nowhere near out of a pandemic, but we are much closer to sort of enjoying the fruits of being outside than we were last summer. And brands are definitely taking advantage of that. And I have Terry here specifically, because if there is one person on staff that has their finger on the very weird pulse of advertising, it's Terry. If there's going to be someone that has a odd campaign to drop in the Slack, it is most definitely Terry T.L. Stanley. So she's going to be our Adweek expert for today on some of the stunts that have kind of floated to the top of our newsroom over the past week. Terry, so what has the past, actually it's probably been a little bit more than a week. What has the past like 1 or 2 weeks been like in terms of the stunts that we've seen?
I think, first of all, people understand that I have a twisted sense of humor. So they tend to bring me those kinds of stories. You know, if they follow me over time, they know what kind of quirkiness I like, mm-hmm. and that might get my attention. So I do tend to get a lot of weird campaigns. And I think we've seen, and we have reported on, the real sort of pent up demand on the brand and ad agency side to really get back out there, be visible, spend money. And I think maybe the stunts are kind of the next phase of that. So first they came back with their sort of standard campaigns. Many of them talked about, they gave advice. They talked to consumers about, here's how you get back out there. And some of them are really cheeky and funny and lots of survival tips and, you know, how to dress in public again and stuff like that. We saw lots of brands doing that. And now I think this is just kind of the next phase, maybe an optimistic phase of like, let's do fun, splashy, big things again. And there have been a lot of them over the last few weeks. It was that first week, I think I said to Shannon and the rest of my team, oh, it's going to be stunt week, which turned into stunt 2 weeks. And so, yeah, I just keep covering stunt after stunt after stunt, and they are clickbait for us. So I guess that's a good thing. They are very eye-catching. They are buzzworthy. They are share-worthy. So I think that's the whole point. We can certainly, with Peter, I'm sure you'll know more on the level of ROI and impact and engagement and brand building if they work. Mm. But certainly initially they work for us because they drive traffic. They're fun stories to do, and they definitely get the brand some attention.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think if they're driving positive brand sentiment and people are sharing it, then you know they're working for sure. And I totally agree. I think that the whole past 18 months brands have been pretty muted because they're trying to judge the mood of the nation, if you like. And I think now we're gradually coming out of it. I think you're right. I think we're seeing a lot more theatre, a lot more brand entertainment. And I think generally that takes the form of stunts, because it's a stunt is kind of just dipping the toe in the water, if you like, as opposed to going all out. And it's pretty difficult at the moment for brands to do anything on an experiential level because we're not quite out of the woods yet. So we're seeing quite a lot of the sort of stunts you've written about.
So we were talking a little bit before we hopped on air, Peter, about sort of the history, or sort of like the non-existent, if you will, history of stunts, and how it's kind of hard to trace the beginning of that. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, we presented a keynote speech at Cannes Lions a few years back now on the art of the publicity stunt, and we were trying to trace the origins of where stunts originally came from. And their origins are really in sort of campfire stories of old. You know, these great narratives that people would tell around the campfire. The stories would get wilder and wilder and people would pass them on. And, you know, by the time the story ended up 100 miles away, it morphed into a much bigger story and so on and so forth. And, you know, I think we touched upon many things in that, but from gladiatorial Rome, where the gladiator spectacles were initially put on as a PR stunt to keep the people in power and keep the people entertained. And those gladiator fights just got more and more elaborate with, you know, live animals, big ships and arenas and what have you. And just going all the way through history up to, you know, P.T. Barnum, where, you know, with his circus, he was the originator of the modern PR stunt. You know, he had his circus, we're very familiar with the character, but his most famous stunt was a whole herd of elephants across the Brooklyn Bridge, I think back in the late 1800s, which garnered worldwide news at the time and ensured that, you know, his theatre circus performances were sold out. And at the same time, you had people like Houdini that were putting themselves in barrels and throwing themselves over Niagara Falls, all of that stuff has kind of laddered up to what we consider to be the modern day PR stunt.
You know, like the sort of observing the stunts over the past just 2 weeks have really made me change my language when it comes to stunts in particular. Because I used to, in my mind, I used to classify stunts as good and bad. But really, the language that works in terms of our industry is effective. What's an effective stunt? Because there have been a lot of bad stunts out there that were like, oh, they shouldn't have done this, but they did it and they got everyone talking about it. So at the end of the day, that's kind of the point of it. Yeah. It's interesting to look at stunts in particular, because I think just that language and that mindset differs from sort of the ones that we apply to everyday ads. And some of those I've had to kind of train my thought process just this past week on a few, many of which Terry covered. Big surprise there. So what was the big trend for the past week and a half, you'd say?
Well, one point I think that always kind of sticks with me about these stunts is that the point is to be much bigger than the stunt itself. It's much bigger than a bathing suit with soup written across it. It's because as Katie Lundstrom wrote about yesterday or the day before, Vizzy Hard Seltzer did their own line of swimwear scented for your favorite tropical drink. They made 200 of those. 200.
Yeah.
So, the numbers can be very, very small. Sometimes we can't even get the numbers. They won't even tell us the numbers. They made 2,500 pints of mac and cheese ice cream. So the numbers are always very small, sometimes undisclosed to us, even when we ask. So it appears to be more of a rush than it actually is. Like, oh, that all that merch sold out in 5 minutes. Well, if you only had 200 suits, okay, sure, it sold out in 5 minutes, right?
I think that's the tactic, though. That's the point. Kraft have got no intention of rolling out this product as a viable product. It's pure theater and entertainment, and it's a way of brands just demonstrating a little bit of personality. But you're right, Terry. It's very much. It's all calibrated to deliver a fame moment for the brand in terms of earned media, in terms of social shares. They're like the fireworks, really, these stunts in between the content strategy that they're doing on a day in, day out basis. But yeah, I mean, we're guilty as well. We launched a flat pack pub, an IKEA style flat pack bar during lockdown for a comedy channel. First time anybody could do that because you couldn't go out to the pub and get a drink. So we created this and it was heavily branded. We only made 10 of them. We only retailed 10 of them and we gave a few away for competition prizes. But that was enough to get a huge amount of earned media coverage and shares this side of the pond. And it was more about the idea and the personality and entering a conversation than it was about this being a viable product. I think people just enjoyed the fun of it all.
That's absolutely what it is. It's that there is a focus on the idea and a very small amount of whatever it is, including that Airbnb Volvic stunt, mm-hmm. where they put down that beautiful little glass mini house in the middle of the Alps and someone gets to stay there.
Yeah.
One person gets to stay there for one night. Oh, okay, two people. Two people at most can stay there for one night. So it's not like you and I can go vacation in this spot. It's a very, very, very small number of people who can actually participate, mm-hmm. or win, but yet the effect is so amplified.
Mm. Well, that's because everybody can participate in the conversation, and that's kind of what counts. So this, you know, this macaroni and cheese ice cream. It's genius because, you know, it's tapping into, I mean, a lot of these things that you've written about this week, the swimsuits, the ice cream, it's all about already entering a conversation that people are already having, i.e. it's summer. So we're talking about swimsuits, we're talking about ice creams. So that's they're entering a cultural conversation we're already having. But just doing it in a way that's really disruptive and super, super shareable. Ice cream, I particularly like the macaroni ice cream one. I mean, there's been some great ice cream stunts in the past. We have Heston Blumenthal over here, who's one of the most acclaimed chefs in the world, who launched his restaurant with his snail and porridge ice cream sort of 20 years ago. And I don't know whether that was a stunt at the time, because it's supposed to taste great, and he kept it on the menu for 10 years, so lots of people get to sample it. But it gave people something to write about when he started out, right? And it became a real calling card for him. And we actually, I was telling you this before we came on air, we created the world's first breast milk ice cream for a company called the Ice Creamists a few years ago now, called the Baby Gaga, which we launched in London. It had a tiny, tiny bit of breast milk in it, but that was enough to send the story all around the world. So I've got a soft spot for that craft one. It reminds me of some of the stuff that we've done.
There's something about ice cream that just really pulls marketers in, it seems. It seems like it's something that's easy to produce. And especially during the summer, ice cream is just sort of this evergreen thing. And especially with National Ice Cream Day coming up, we can kind of expect for a lot of brands to step forward with ice cream that is viable and stuff that is just shouldn't see the light of day, kind of like the Kraft mac and cheese ice cream. But ice cream wasn't the only thing that kind of alarmed my taste buds this week, because didn't Airheads also enter the chicken sandwich race with a chicken sandwich that would otherwise look tasty if the bun wasn't made of Airheads? So that sends it in a very different direction than what we've seen come out of the chicken sandwich wars. But it allows them to participate in a conversation that they otherwise would have no business being in. So in that way, it's very intelligent, because this chicken sandwich wars thing is sort of ongoing. It's going on 2 years now in this sort of rough battle. It's just nasty. Now, I think it's important, and this is just sort of coming from a very outside point of view, I think it is important to release those numbers and let people know, especially when it comes to food, like, we are making a very limited batch of this, specifically in terms of things like the Kraft mac and cheese ice cream. Because what that reads to the unknowing person is that they're making a huge amount of something that they know is not going to work, that they know that no one is going to eat, which normally wouldn't matter. But when you're talking about things like sustainability, and we're talking about reduced food waste, and that sort of rising in terms of our priorities, things like that could raise an alarm. But when you put like a small number to it and say, we sent this to a few people that would care because they knew that they would talk about it and that's what we needed to get done, it does put a different spin on it. Swimsuits, everyone needs a swimsuit.
What I can understand about that one, and you'll have to forgive me because I'm not familiar with the brand, was whether they were inferring that eating soup would give you that sort of swimsuit type body and sort of make it synonymous with that. Because there's been some campaigns over here that have got in a whole lot of trouble for that sort of beach body ready type promise. And it seemed to be subtly making that link. But true. Maybe I got that wrong.
Yeah. What was the underlying message of that, Terry? Do you remember?
Honestly, I think they did research, they talked to their consumers, they said, it's summer and it's hot, do you still eat soup? And that's the insight came from, it may seem counterintuitive that anybody would order hot soup during the summer, and yet 70% of their fans still do. So, and that was kind of the connection. I don't think there was any reference to Beachbody or and it was a size inclusive line.
Important.
So it, yeah,
Okay. No, that my bad. But a very well-trodden route, though, as I think you mentioned earlier, in terms of food brands going out with their outfits. I think we've got a brand, Just Eat over here, that like a Deliveroo type service that we worked with. We created a whole range of what twosies they were called, and onesies, but essentially outfits that you could eat your takeaway in, that were modeled on the different takeaways, but they had various pockets to hold all the sauces, all that kind of stuff, and so on. But you know, you could get the pepperoni version, the sushi version. So this kind of thing's been done quite a lot, but yeah, I thought it was fun to read.
I love a clothing based one, especially one that is size inclusive, because that's not as common as it should be in terms of these. Like, it's very hard to find things that go above a 1XL. You're lucky if you get a 2XL. So it's good when brands within just a stunt that's supposed to sort of be a blip in the pop culture zeitgeist still take that time to recognize that their audience is broad and that they can use this opportunity to appeal to all of them rather than a small number. Not so keen on the food ones, as Terry knows, that I feel like if I ever have an industry villain origin story, it's that someone made like a Grey Poupon ice cream and I'm just like, I can't do it. But it's still, if it's implemented well, it makes it effective. So my next question, or I guess sort of to wrap this conversation up a little bit, is we talked a lot about what makes a resonant stunt, what makes a memorable marketing stunt. Doesn't necessarily have to be good or bad, but something that has kept us talking. Do you, either of you, have a favorite stunt?
Sure.
Or one that you still remember?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess the ones we've spoken about today have been sort of veered on the sort of tactical side in terms of limited edition product releases and what have you, and the kind of thing that you could do in a post-COVID world, I guess. But you know, if you're looking at the sort of zenith of PR stunts, then you have to look at things like the Red Bull Stratos space dive, which literally broke the internet. You know, the bigger, the bolder, the more dangerous, the higher the risk. The bigger the return. And that kind of follows in the footsteps of the things that, you know, Houdini was doing or Barnum was doing back in the day. They were taking huge risks and getting huge reward in terms of everybody was talking about what they were doing. And I think that Red Bull stunt, I think, will be a difficult one for brands to beat.
I don't know a single person that didn't tune in that day.
Yeah.
That was huge, and that, to the point where I forgot that it was branded. Like, it was just this incredible thing that was happening.
Well, it's an unusual one in the sense that most PR stunts that we're talking about today, in fact, 99% of PR stunts kind of rely on a bit of humor as the sort of bond that sends them super social. And that didn't. That had, you either got the humor, on the other side you've got the do or die, and it's in between one of those. But it has to provide a spectacle. Whatever you're doing, it has to be something super visual that provides a spectacle and that sort of gives a bit of theater.
And speaking of that, there's something I'm working on right now coming up. There's a CBD brand called Charlotte's Web, and they have created a stunt. They are known for some beautiful outdoor stunts that they've done, like beautiful outdoor advertising. They did a crop circle in the middle of the Midwest where they basically did a beautiful piece of art. So they have, and it's all very, very connected to their Trust the Earth tagline. So everything they do is visually references that, and in many cases it digs into the actual outdoors. They have something coming up where they have put vending machines for their product on top of a mountain in Utah, so that when the extreme athletes get to the top of the mountain and their muscles are killing them, they have CBD there to use. That, to me, it taps into a couple of things. It's absolutely visual, as you were saying, Peter. It's one of those big, beautiful, wow, look at that landscape kind of incredible thing. You should see the effort that they went to get the machine on top of the mountain, which is kind of fascinating to watch. And it's also that tapping into exactly that consumer insight, like at that moment. And like, I think the Heinz hot dog campaign recently did the same thing. Everyone, I mean, remember when I was a kid and there were those last two hot dogs left over and my mom would make us like roll up a piece of bread and it was so sad because there was
infuriating.
There was no bun for the last two hot dogs. And if I, you know, cause I was the littlest kid, I would often get stuck without the, you know, so annoying. So why aren't there 10 hot dog buns and 10 hot dogs? So everyone's been talking about that forever. Yeah. And so by tapping into that and actually making it, you know, a petition, it was just, it was really spot on.
Yeah, love that.
I'm speaking as the ghost of our European Bureau editor-in-chief, Stephen Lepetak, here. And he very much insisted that I mention the 9-foot Jeff Goldblum statue that appeared in celebration of the 25th anniversary of Jurassic Park. Which I remember that the picture of like this, like nearly bare chested Jeff Goldblum, like leaning, on the lawn, in front of London Towers Bridge. That was truly something. Yeah. And it worked because again, that's a personality that like, you know, everyone loved. So
yeah.
Great work.
And it was big. And that's the route one with PR stunts is can you make it big and will it look good? And that was you're right, it worked because it was Jeff Goldblum and that was a meme that was kind of like brought to life. So it had a lot of humor in it, which without the humor, it just wouldn't have worked. But, you know, I think lesser brands have just thought, well, I know what, let's just make something really big. Mm-hmm. That will do the job. And it doesn't. There's so much more artistry involved in that. In a sort of brand or PR stunt than that. So yeah, I like that one too.
And there's a lot that could be said for the stunts that are a little bit smaller in scale.
Yeah.
The ones that just manage to like strike a weird nerve. Mm. And that's enough to get everyone talking. Cause like back in like, I think it was like 1996 when Taco Bell released that press release, it's like, we're going to buy the Liberty Bell and we're going to rename it. And that was all it took to get, I think the number was like $25 million in free publicity because everyone was so outraged at this chain buying this piece of American history seemingly at whim. Of course, they didn't do it, but it was just enough to, one, get people talking about Taco Bell's audacity and also getting enough people to go, can they do that? Is that something that anyone can just do? And it was like, I think it cost them like $300,000 drop in the bucket for a legacy chain like that. And they managed to make a huge splash just by showing that they had kind of a lot of guts. So that I think was interesting. Like I love the big splashy artistic ones, but also the ones that just show that, you know, we have a lot of nerve are pretty cool too. So to wrap, what would you say is the best way to get to your heart as a consumer? If you were to tell brands, like if you were to craft a stunt that looks like this, this is the thing that would catch me, what would it be? And we can start with you, Terry.
I think it needs to say something about your brand. It needs to convey, as Peter said, your brand personality and your brand DNA. If it's too much of a stretch, I don't get it. You've lost me. But it needs to, yes, clever is good. Outrageous is good. Something we've never seen before, even though some of these concepts, as Peter has noted, some of the concepts get recycled. It might be a similar idea. We've seen apparel drops before. It's happened a lot. So, but it just depends. I mean, if Popeyes does something that's kind of an homage to Blue Ivy, the fashion line, that stands out. It's not just a piece of apparel. It's a really cool piece of apparel. So I think it needs to say something about your brand. It needs to have personality. It needs to really pop in a sea of people trying to get our attention.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. Not a lot to add to that. But clearly, it has to be rooted in a brand narrative that makes sense. But I mean, for me, it has to make me feel something. So whether it's OMG, LOL, WTF, that's what I want from my PR stunts. And, you know, if it ticks one of those boxes, then I'm going to be sharing it. It's going to be popping up on my timeline and, you know, job done.
I wholeheartedly agree. The ones that resonate to me, like you said, tell me something about the brand, tell me something about their imagination, because ultimately it's not just a matter of advertising your product, but for those of us that are in the industry, it kind of sets the bar for future creative from you. So if you're showing that you have a creative mind, that's going for me as an editor that looks specifically at creative, that lets me know that I need to look at this brand that I need to basically train my eye on this particular brand to look at future products or future projects rather. So that sort of tickles my fancy as an editor and as a consumer. I like community building things. I like things that get all of my friends talking about this one thing that we can sort of join in on this joke. It's ideal for, of course, you as a brand to have as many people talking about it as possible, but it's also great for us as just people who sort of live on the internet to be able to have this sort of point of like, hey, do you remember when Kraft released this gross macaroni and cheese? Because everyone was talking about it. And it creates these moments that live forever. So for me, I'm really excited to see what's to come in the coming weeks. Because if this past week has been any indication, I think we're probably in for a pretty wild ride. So yeah, I think that does it for that conversation. We are going to take a short break, but before we do, Peter, thank you so much for joining us today. This was so fun, and I think very illuminating in terms of what we should look for and what kind of the mindset that brands and agencies are having when these things are happening in front of us.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Enjoyed it.
Absolutely. We are going to take a short break. And we are back. Before we go, we did have some Emmy nominations drop this week. So I think it's best for us to just take a brief look at the outstanding commercial category of the upcoming awards ceremony. This is my first year paying close attention as an editor. So it's very interesting, especially just coming off of Cannes, to see this sort of short list of nominees versus what kind of took us by storm at Cannes. So I'm going to read off the nominations real quick. So we have AirPods Pro Jump from TBWA Media Arts Lab, Imperial Woodpecker, Alexa's Body with Amazon Alexa. That's Lucky General's ad agency's Hungry Man, or I'm sorry, Lucky General's the ad agency, Hungry Man is the production company. Better, Mamba Forever from Nike, that is Wieden and Kennedy, and Pretty Bird. It already does that. Apple Watch Series 6, so again, Apple and MJZ. You Can't Stop Us, another one from Nike, Wieden and Kennedy, and Pulse as the production agency, and You Love Me, Beats by Dre. And that is translation and, again, Pretty Bird. So reoccurring theme between Apple and Nike, them sort of dominating the category there. Terry, what are your thoughts on this crop of nominees?
I'm not exactly sure what that nomination process is like and the submission process. We know about Cannes. We know how important that is to agencies and how active they are and proactive in getting their work recognized. Mm-hmm. On the Emmys, I'm not really sure if it's that same process. You know, maybe it is. Maybe there are just as many ads that get submitted for nominations. I'm just not quite sure. I do know that it's a peer reviewed or peer judged contest. So yeah, it's going to be people in the commercial wing of the TV Academy. So It could be a mix of directors, actors, below the line folks, but in that genre. So it's peers voting on peers' work. But I think it's not really surprising that we see those very cinematic ads that have been chosen. And the one that stands out to me is the Beats by Dre, because I had covered that right before it broke. And I was just really, really impressed with that piece of work. And I'm glad to see it on this list.
Me too. That was definitely a resonant and devastating narrative that they made work so beautifully, especially when you're touching on this ongoing issue of cultural appropriation and systemic racism and sort of bringing that to the forefront. And with Beats being sort of the premier line of electronics when it comes to headphones, I thought it was really great for them to fashion such a huge platform to talk about that. Maybe not so surprising considering that it is Beats by Dre, but it's still great to have those issues synthesized in one very neat bit of creative from the perspectives of people who live it. So it was really great to see that on there. I am a sucker for style as well. So it's maybe not surprising that I really liked Jump by AirPods Pro. Not necessarily, I mean, you kind of expect sort of the same music-led creative choreography, things of that nature in an AirPods related ad. It's not necessarily anything that stands out, but I do like the creativity shown throughout that suite of advertisements. So pulling, you know, the pavement, like street lines, the line dividers, and turning them into jump ropes while this guy like rocks out in his AirPods. I thought that was pretty cool. Ultimately, I do hope that You Love Me wins. It's hard to determine. It's kind of hard to predict what's going to appease the Academy, because like you said, it's voted on by your peers, but it's not like Cannes, where you kind of get this rolling celebration of ads that you kind of observe all year. Like, we kind of saw how the industry responded to Womb Stories and kind of deduced from there, like, oh, Womb Stories is going to kill it at Cannes. And it did. A little bit harder with this one, because it seems like they're going for a little bit of a different feel, like you said, in terms of what they want to honor.
And I'm not sure how much of, say, ad history is going to be factored in. Certainly, mm-hmm. You know, Cannes is looking at a broader picture, I think, and they are choosing things that that are very much of their time. Mm-hmm. So that's both pop culture history and ad history. I'm not sure if the Emmys will reflect that, but maybe that's what they're saying by choosing something like You Love Me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they do have that. And what I feel like was so standout about that ad, which may or may not come into the consideration for Emmy, is that it was so unexpected or so different from what Beats had done in the past. Beats mm-hmm. is very, very product focused.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, there's always music and it's great visually, but they hadn't stepped into this arena before. And
right.
the timeliness of it, the message, it was new for them. It was unexpected. I remember the first time I watched it, and I was absolutely blown away, not only by what I was seeing, but by realizing that this is something they are stepping into, a very different kind of maturity for the brand, mm-hmm. and taking on a real message-based campaign when that's not exactly what they were known for.
Right. So in terms of, like you said, sort of taking in an evolution of a brand, or at least a brand that's stepping outside of what we normally see from them, I would hope that that would get that recognition. In terms of like predicting a winner, again, kind of difficult because we don't necessarily know what they're looking for. I would say that if we were to go by sort of Emmy trends, I would say, I would think that Mamba Forever has a little bit of an edge because there is that posthumous element with, like, this is an opportunity to celebrate Kobe Bryant once again, and probably one of the few opportunities we can celebrate them in this, celebrate him in this capacity. So there's that. And
no one does a tribute better than Nike.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing with Nike, is that they set such a high bar for themselves in terms of making these grand tributes that work, that are respectful and seem to be crafted out of love. And when you have such a beloved figure like Kobe Bryant in LA, where, you know, the Emmys are obviously going to be taking place, I wonder how that's going to have an effect on the voting body. If it wins, it's not a disappointment. It is certainly a beautiful, well-crafted ad. But that might have a little bit of an edge over the others in terms of what the Emmys may look for in this moment. But I hope that You Love Me makes it out on top ultimately, because that message is just so evergreen. And it's really important for brands to sort of take that stand and inform them that, you know, Black culture is not a spectator sport. It's not something to borrow from. It's something to appreciate respectfully. So, yeah, that is my hope for that. I think Terry's kind of, you're kind of along the same lines.
Nike does amazing work. There's no doubt about it. We all instantly know a Nike ad when we see it. That says a lot. And their tributes, quite obviously, there's a long history there. And just their work in general in really celebrating athleticism and celebrating personalities, they're so well known for that. And there is absolutely nothing politicized about that, which makes it a little bit safer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Emmy voters have been known to be safe. So,
mm-hmm. Right. That pretty much sums that up. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out on top. And I'm sure we will discuss it in some capacity, either in editorial or on the podcast when we do finally have that winner. But in terms of this crop of nominees, I mean, I think we at Adweek can at the very least extend a congratulations to all of the agencies who, you know, continuously work hard to provide beautiful and memorable creative. And I mean, I can't think of a better bunch of worthy agencies than the ones that are honored here. So congratulations to all on that. Best of luck to everybody on that one. And I guess we will see everyone on the other side of that. So I think that does it for us. Terry, thank you so, so much for joining us here today. And I look forward to more work from you, but I'm also low-key scared. So because you, like I said, you get some pretty oddball ones. But in any case, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. And welcome again to your new gig, which is in addition to all your other gigs at Adweek. But I love it.
Thank you so, so much. We will definitely be chatting soon, I can imagine. So yeah, this was really great. Thank you so, so much. Our theme music is by Home. This week's episode was produced by Nick Gardner and edited by Lane McGibney. If you haven't already, please, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can reach us at any time at podcasts@adweek.com. That is podcasts@adweek.com. I'm Shannon Miller. Thank you for joining us. We will chat next week. Bye.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hats because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.